We've talked for generations now about the impact on children when women work outside the home. It's not like there's a lot of choice these days. Most middle-class living now requires two paychecks. Our guest this hour worked and raised kids and talked to many more women and children, or former children, in those circumstances for her book, My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. Pamela Lenihan spent 21 years on Wall Street as partner and executive in investment banks. She's currently a member of three corporate boards of directors and one nonprofit. And yes, she herself kept her career going while raising two kids who are now grown and raising families of their own. Pamela Lenihan, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's start with something fundamental. Does it surprise you that this is still an issue, still a topic of discussion in our time?
It does surprise me, and it seems that the women of my generation who were raising kids and working did it very quietly, and I guess we didn't do a very good job of explaining to other mothers coming up how to get it done. And so everywhere I go and networking events, young mothers come up and ask me, how did you do it all? So that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is to give them some confidence that they could do it.
You know, in fact, you mentioned a couple of vignettes in the book where it seemed like women didn't want to talk much around the office in the mid-70s, for example, about having kids at home.
Well, it wasn't even the 70s. I mean, I think it went long into the 90s, is that there were no pictures of kids in the office. There were no Facebook friends. There was no Facebook. There were no email lists of working mothers. And so I think that we were all, as I said, in our own silos, and we were very isolated. I think the women of today's generation are doing a much better job of staying connected with each other.
Does it make you laugh? Does it rankle you that we never seem to have this discussion about men and them devoting attention to work and trying to raise kids too?
Well, I think that every family is different, but we share common concerns, and that women really, in most cases, are the primary parent, whether she works or not. So I think that it's not to say that's true in every family, but I think that it is the mother who perhaps worries about this more than the men do.
You mentioned that you started at Chase Manhattan in 1974. Were there any other women around you at that time?
There were women who had children and left, and there were some women after me. And it was funny, we just didn't talk about having children. So I think that we were all a little intimidated back then. Those were the days when women were encouraged to wear suits and were wearing, you know, shirts with little ties on them. So it was a very different time. But there weren't a lot of role models at the time.
Were there any expectations expressed explicitly from corporate masters about what the expectations were of women who had children in the workplace?
Well, I think that children were to not be talked about. And so I know that when I was pregnant with my second child, it was a different job at that point. I was at a different firm. And I showed up for the first time in maternity clothes, and a man I had worked with for 3 years started talking to me about how my life would be so different. And he was a father of five, and so I thought he was telling me how two children would be different than one. And I said, well, you know, gee, you have a lot of kids. Why does the second child make such a big difference? And he looked at me incredulously, and he said, you're a mother? It never occurred to me you were a mother. So I think that, we really didn't have those type of conversations during the workplace.
Wow. So the men don't even talk about their home lives whatsoever, or didn't at that time anyway.
No, and I think that when men do talk about their home lives, they tend to talk about them as coaching their kids' sports, et cetera. They don't really talk about some of the things that they do. There are a lot of fathers out there who are the first person home and feeds the child, or the one who picks them up or drops them off from daycare. But we really don't have an open discussion about all the responsibilities that parents have and how they need to really work as a team to get these solutions.
This could have easily been a memoir, but you chose to take it in a different direction. You talked to lots of other people. Who else?
Well, spoke to about 70 working mothers and their grown children, and then, I think importantly, interviewed through a survey more than 1,000 working or grown children aged 23 to 44 to try and compare the childhoods of children whose mothers worked with children whose mothers stayed at home. Because that was really the question, is not how did these children do, because children will do different things as they grow up, but how did they do if their mother worked or not worked? We wanted to have that two comparison.
And it sounds like through the interview process, some of the interview subjects learned a few things about their own family members, their own moms, their own kids.
It was. It was interesting that I interviewed everyone separately, and yet these families said that it engendered a lot of conversation, and in fact have in the back of the book some discussion guides. So I've heard back from a number of these families, and in fact other families who have just bought the book, about how this has been really a great way for them to sit down and talk about their childhood, because most families don't do that. We just go day to day, but to look back and really talk about what were some of the positive things and maybe some of the negative things that they would change.
Are these discussions you had with your own now grown children before you went through this process?
Well, I've had a lot of conversations with my children during this process, and it's very interesting because I have a daughter who is now a working mother who has three children, and she said one of the things that she really took away from the book was that she needs to get out of her house in order to really focus on her children, that she finds that when she's at home, she's the person in charge, and there's always another project to do or always some other errand she needs to run. But when they try to get away, even if it's just a weekend where they can go to a friend's house or they can, most recently during the holidays, they took their children up skiing for a long weekend, it's great because she doesn't have those responsibilities at home. So I think everyone's going to take away different things from this book.
Interesting. So the distance gives her a chance to assess what's going on there a little more clearly?
Right. I think the story that resonated with her is that one of the working mothers said that when she was on vacation, she had the permission to just play with her children, and so that she wasn't the person who was in charge all the time.
Huh. Okay. There's more of that in the book, clearly. We'll talk about that more with Pamela Lenihan, who's the author of My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Pamela and with your phone calls and emails in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Pamela Lenihan, who spent many years working and raising children at the same time. And it's not so much that she shares her experiences, but has explored what it means to be a working mother in today's world in a book, My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. It's not her own experiences by a long shot. There's also 70-plus interviews and more than 1,000 people who sent comments in through a survey, all compiled in this book. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Comments and questions on the topic of working motherhood, welcome at 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Pamela, you're clear you're not trying to answer the question for anyone of whether to work.
No, I think that's a decision that every family has to make on their own. And so what the point of the book was really to say that if you choose to work, that your children will be fine. But no, I think that's a very personal decision.
There is a real oh yeah moment, at least oh yeah for me early in the book, where you point out that kids won't think that mom working is unusual, certainly not in today's world.
No, children really want to be like other kids, and so it's just a question of how they compare. And I think one of the stories that I really enjoyed is a working mother who was doing a startup from home, and so she picked up her own child from preschool. And she lived in a neighborhood where a lot of the mothers worked, and so the daughter turned to her one day and said, "Mommy, why can't I have a nanny pick me up like everyone else?" So children just want to be like the other kids. And if you work and your friends work and your family work, they're just going to view it as normal.
That story really stood out to me, the whole idea that I need to be like all the other kids. Come on.
That's right. That's what kids want.
Mm-hmm. So what messages do kids seem to absorb from the fact of mom working?
Well, one thing is that they are proud of their working mother, and they say that the working mother provided them with a strong work ethic. They saw the mother get up and go to work, even on days when it wasn't always fun. They also say that the working mothers taught them to be independent, and a lot of that is because the mother wasn't always going to be there. They also said that the mothers taught them to be resilient, that these mothers felt the children had to learn how to solve their own problems. So I think that we saw were a lot of very positive things that working mothers deliberately taught their children. All mothers teach their children these things, but maybe working mothers had to be a little more conscious of it because they knew they weren't going to be there all the time.
And what are the figures now? I don't even remember what the current level of women working outside the home after childbirth is.
It's 70% of women who have children under the 18 are in the workforce, and that's up from about 47% in the mid-70s. So there's been a huge shift in what the traditional family is just in one generation.
Hmm. So the sense of pride that kids feel in mom working, was that asked about whether they feel that for fathers too, or were fathers more or less invisible in the survey process?
No, I do have all the statistics on fathers. It just got to be a little unwieldy to have so many statistics in a book. But it's interesting. Children are more proud of their mothers working than they are of their fathers. And maybe that's just that they know that the mothers perhaps work a little harder in the home as well as in work. But it was funny because in the dual working parent homes, both the daughters and the sons are more proud of their mothers working than they are of their fathers.
Interesting. But we're not sure if that's because they're aware of the fact that mom does a lot of work in the house too.
You know, it's very hard to tell when you're surveying more than 1,000 people as to exactly why. But I just thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. There are some great little stories in here, like the class making gifts for parents and the one where the kids made potholders and keychains.
Yes, I thought that was really a great story that in this particular family, the mother had a long commute, and it was the father who worked closer, who was the first person home. So he was the one who got dinner ready for the family. And so in elementary school, the teacher was having the children make potholders for the mothers and keychains for the father. But when this daughter brought the presents home at Christmas time, she reversed them because in her house, it was the father who needed the potholder.
And what I found interesting about that, aside from the decision made, was the other decision made not to make a big deal out of it at school. She just got them home and then took care of it there.
Right. And I think that she said that she never really told her teacher. It's just it made sense for her family.
All right. There's a whole chapter in here on childcare, which is not an issue for long, you say.
Well, childcare is time-consuming and very stressful when your children are young. But by middle school, especially, children are very involved in outside activities. And so a lot of these children reported taking care of themselves in middle and high school. But the fact is they weren't, you know, that old latchkey kid. 40% of the children of working mothers reported being involved in sports, and another 40% or more than 40% in other activities. So what the mothers were doing is they were making arrangements for these children to really learn new skills and be cared for by another responsible adult. But the children thought they were being very independent.
Hmm. The book is called My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. Pamela Lenihan wrote it and joins us on the Jefferson Exchange. How wrenching a decision was that to settle on somebody to provide primary child care for your children when they were young?
Oh, I think it's very difficult. I think it's very hard when a mother goes back to work and has a young baby, because no matter how good the child care option you have, you want to be doing that yourself. It's kind of a natural thing. But the fact is, as we said, it's very hard for most families to support themselves on one income, and so most mothers do go back to work. So I think that the point is to find quality child care, be that in a good child care center or in someone else's home or your own home. But the thing that I found interesting out of the survey and the interviews is that these children have very good memories. So my conclusion was that working mothers are doing a great job finding high-quality child care.
Good memories for their moms, good memories for the child care they got?
Good memories for the child care. You know, they like getting out and seeing other kids if they're in daycare, or they had warm relationships with the babysitters or the people who ran the home daycare centers. So there are a lot of wonderful people out there who are providing good child care options for our children.
Now, you mentioned that obviously the intensity of child care changes as the kids get older, as they get off into middle and high school. But in your case, too, a difference in choices for the kinds of people you would get for the child care.
Well, in my own case, I had a long commute. And so after a few years, I really needed to have someone in my home. And so, but as my kids got older, they got a little more difficult, as teenagers tend to. And so I only needed someone really in the morning to get them off to school. And then from that 4 to 7 time period between the time they got off the bus and when I got home. And so I ended up using graduate students. So they were free during the day to pursue their degree. And they were like older sisters. And so they were wonderful young women who taught my kids lots of things.
That's what I noticed, that it kind of went from a motherly person model to a somewhat younger, more sisterly model as time went on.
Right, although these were tough sisters. So what I loved about these women is that when my daughter especially would get out of line, they would tell her she was out of line, which they took better from somebody who was in her 20s than maybe they would someone who was closer to her mother's age.
Hmm. Was that a deliberate move on your part, or just something that made sense because of the people available?
Well, it turned out to be one of my my providers got ill, and I didn't want to replace her. She ended up not coming back, but I got somebody on a temporary basis who was a graduate student, and it worked out so well. She stayed with us until she got her degree, and then I had two other people from her same school who got different types of graduate degrees. So we had three really wonderful women who were in our lives. And again, my children are still Facebook friends and go visit these women. So they remain part of our sort of larger family.
Hmm. The things that you try to monitor with your kids as they get older, particularly where they're going with their schoolwork, and there's a trend that you pointed out here that happens in kids' marks and their grades as they move to the next level of school. What is that trend?
Well, that really surprised me, but I guess it's well known in the education circles, is that all children, as they go from elementary to middle and then middle to high school, report a decline in their grades or decline in the good grades. And so that surprised me. And with the children of working mothers, it seemed to happen a little bit faster in middle school as opposed to it happened more in high school with the children whose mothers stayed at home. So what that told me is you really need to stay on top of this. But I think that we mothers know that. As children go from having one teacher to many teachers, the way they do in middle school, and then even a lot more independence in high school, you've got to be sure that you as a parent are aware of what's going on. And I think today technology helps parents do that. Teachers email lists home, you understand what the homework schedule is. And so I think that there are ways to stay connected with the teacher through email and through lists, et cetera, that we didn't have in my generation.
Pamela Lenihan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the book, My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. She did a lot of interviews and took in a bunch of survey responses as well to put together the information for this book. Join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. In talking about things like kids and grades, how do you advise parents not to freak out when kids go through rough patches at school?
Well, I think you need to stay in touch with the teacher and see whether this is normal behavior or this is something you really need to address. And I really encourage parents not to do their kids' homework for them, because how does the teacher know if the child is having problems if the work that's turned in is perfect all the time? So, I think that one of the sons that I interviewed had a really great saying. Is he said that you need to let children fail, that you need to really let them learn how to do things on their own. So if you, as he said, you need to be there, but not be there all the time.
But when do you know that maybe it's not just, you know, I let him fail and then he picked himself up and moved on, and he's just going to continue to fail if somebody doesn't intervene?
Well, I think that's when you really need to rely upon the experts. The teachers are there on a regular basis. They're the ones who really see your child in school and can tell you whether this is the normal amount of work or whether this child is struggling. And do you need to get help from the teacher, or do you need to get some type of outside service, either provided by the school or something you need to work on yourself?
What kinds of advice developed either from you or from the process of taking in the comments of the people that you talked to about how moms can avoid the trap of spending too much time at work and away from the kids?
Well, that's hard, because there are some days when work is going to take precedence, and there are some days when the kids are going to take precedence. And so I think that what we heard from the mothers and the grown children is that you need to talk to your children about what's important to them. You don't need to go to every little thing, but you need to find out what's important, whether that's the school play. Certain things like the school play and the big games are always important, so put those on your calendar. But do you need to be at every little event, or do they really want you to go to a certain school event, for example? So ask your children what's important, but recognize you won't be able to go to everything. And the two of you, you and your child, can figure that out.
How do you? I imagine you had a few times when you tried to pry the information out of kids. Like, well, is this important to you? It's like, no, it's okay, it's okay. You know, and you get the it's okay thing out the yin yang until you finally go, okay, what do you want me to attend.
Oh, you're going to make mistakes. I know that, for example, my son had an, quote-unquote, eighth grade graduation, and he was moving from one building to the next building. And, you know, it was a sort of an all-day thing that started with a picnic and et cetera. And so I couldn't get out of him. I said, okay, how about if I just come for the 4 o'clock event and skip the 12 o'clock picnic so at least I can get some of the workday in? And it had his sister, who was in the high school, go to that. And he said, fine. You don't have to go to anything, no problem. But, of course, every other parent had gone to the entire day. And so, you know, that was a mistake I made listening to him. And so when I had a young mother say to me, well, I'm not sure I should go to this networking event because my child has an eighth grade graduation, I said, go. You know, I made that mistake. Don't you make the same mistake. So, you know, you're not going to make every your decision correctly, but you just do the best you can.
Okay, events aside, when everybody's home, what are the kinds of things that cropped up as good ways to organize family time?
Well, it's interesting. Asking the children about what were their favorite events, family meals outranked everything 2-1. And that's not to say that you need to do dinner on a regular basis because it may not work with your commute. But you should try to get together as a family, whether it's breakfast, whether it's meals on weekends. But kids really like just sitting down and talking. It's not about the food. It's about the connection.
Are there any caveats emerging now about barring cell phones from the table when you
gather for these meals? Absolutely. It really doesn't count if everybody's looking at a screen. So a lot of families today are saying that they want an hour when they're sitting down where everybody's phones are away from the table. And parents, that includes us too.
How much should you enforce things as a parent, though, about, you know, being around the table versus when you get to the age where kids would rather be with their friends? Like, oh, you know, Tommy's coming, we're going to go skateboarding, that kind of thing.
Well, a number of these grown children said that their parents were very forceful, and so that even in families where they had a divorce situation and kids were living with different parents, that there would be one night a week that was family night, and the kids complained about it bitterly, but they said that looking back, they really appreciated that their parents insisted they do that, and now they're all very connected.
I got that a lot from this book, though, the things that some of the grown children said they really didn't enjoy at all or didn't think they did when they were kids. Now they look back on it, it's like, wow, that really did help me a lot.
Right, and they're doing it with their own children. So, you know, we're the parents, and so you're not your parent. You're not trying to be your child's best friend. You're trying to be your best parent.
Pamela Lenihan is the author and collector of information from a lot of other parents for the book My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. She's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Now, in terms of family activities, watching TV, you say, is okay.
It is okay as long as it's a family activity and people aren't doing it in separate rooms. And so I had a couple examples. One, a young man has said that they always had the news on while they were getting ready for dinner, and then they turn off the TV and sit down and talk about what's going on in the world. I mean, what a great educational opportunity. Another family talked about on weekends that they would have what they called nests, that they would line the den with pillows and blankets, and they would pop popcorn and maybe have some hot chocolate, and they would watch family movies together. So it's really about what you're doing as a family.
What other kinds of things let kids know they have supportive families around them?
Well, kids really like to get together with grandmothers. I thought that was great that we talked about different mentors. The favorite adult or the person most influential after parents was a teacher. But they loved their grandmother. They found grandmothers and grandfathers gave them unconditional love. So getting together, you know, with family members is also good. Cooking and baking. They like to be in the kitchen when you're doing things. They love to bake. I mean, my kids love to bake cookies. It's a great way to teach them math, by the way. So there are lots of things you can do. You can go on a walk. You can go on a bike ride. So it's really about that way to just sort of get out of your routine and really focus on each other.
That is a good point, to not get too far into the routine, because I sense in the chapter on downtime you're trying to find a medium between let's clean house and let's go to Disneyland.
Well, but you know, it's interesting. One of my favorite stories was about cleaning house. And so it was a young woman who said that every Saturday morning, she and her mother would clean house from the time she was 4 years old. And so her mother would put Bruce Springsteen on the radio and turn it up loud, and they would dance and they would dust and they would vacuum. And she said, even today in her 20s, every time she hears Bruce Springsteen, she smiles.
But doesn't reach for the, you know, the can of cleaner or something.
Probably not.
Even as you pointed out, the grocery store can be meaningful. It sounds like it was for you and your daughter.
It was, and it was for a lot of families, but I used to drive home from work and pick up my daughter and then drive back out and put her in the cart, and we'd go up and down the aisles and take things off the shelves. And, you know, she swears that today she learned how to read in the grocery store.
Did she look at the labels for nutritional information and stuff like that?
Well, I don't know, but we used to talk about what was in it, and it was really just more about what different words were and really having that time, just the two of us.
Birthdays come up a couple of times in the book here in the chapter on downtime. This is a tricky business, given how busy people can be and might not be able to have a birthday party on the day. What do you recommend?
Well, I thought one of my favorite stories, and in fact it was one I personally witnessed, it was at a business meeting that was out of town during the week, and one of the women mentioned that it was her daughter's birthday, and a man turned to her, and I thought rather thoughtlessly said, "Oh, you must feel so guilty missing your daughter's birthday." And she turned to him and said, "My children know that all birthday parties are on weekends."
Gave it back to him pretty fast.
She did.
All right. The book is called My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. Pamela Lenihan is the author and our guest on The Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with her. If you'd like to join us, we'll take your phone calls and emails as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Pamela Lenihan, who spent 21 years working on Wall Street and trying to raise kids at the same time, which she did successfully. Her kids are now grown and parents themselves, and speak nicely of the days when mom was at work and spent time at home as well. She's written a whole book comparing her experiences and bringing in lots of other people's experiences as well. It's called My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, perhaps with some stories of your own from when you were raising kids and working at the same time. 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Chapter on downtime again. I keep coming back to this, I know, but this is pretty important stuff because this is when you're together and not working in some way, shape, or form, not necessarily schoolwork, housework, etc. Get the kids outdoors, you say, big one.
Yes, kids love being outdoors. That was another one of their favorite activities. And a lot of these outdoor activities are just in your own backyard, whether they're swings, whether they're that basketball net that you have, whether it's the scooters that we see everybody on these days. So it's just a question of you being there and having really fun with your children.
Holidays get a whole chapter in the book. How do you advise people not to put too much pressure on holidays to deliver scenes of you know, unbounded glee?
Well, holidays, we've just come through the holiday season, and a lot of people probably found them very stressful, but children really just like the extra time with you, and they like seeing some of the traditions that are passed on. A lot of children mentioned making gingerbread houses, for example. And one mother talked about when her daughter was born that she was a very particular person and she liked her gingerbread house just so and her cookies just so, and she got very upset that her little daughter didn't have the same level of perfection. But she realized that she could each have their own gingerbread house, and then when her two boys were born a number of years later, they realized they could have a whole village. So it's really about just a fun activity. And I tell people, buy one that's already made and get a can of icing and buy some candy from the grocery store. It's really about not having this perfect house that would go in a magazine, but just the fact that you're doing fun things together.
It's the time together. It's the closeness, all that stuff.
It is. And so it's the smell of the cookies, it's the food that you serve. It's something that is done over and over again, and you can make new traditions with your own family.
There's another oh yeah moment in this part of the book, which is the revelation, which isn't a revelation, I'm sure, to a lot of people, that, you know, children do want time with their mother. Okay, that's a given. They want their mother to be happy.
They do want their mother to be happy. And, you know, that's one of the greatest gifts you can give children, is to show them that you can really manage things. If you're always stressed out, you're going to stress out your children too. And so sometimes you need to just kind of take a step back and just breathe. And it's really about having low-stress holidays, not about having perfect holidays.
There's a whole chapter here on vacations as well, which raises the question, as time goes on, if people are finding it harder to take vacations from work.
Well, I think that we really need to, as a society, realize that vacations are important. And this idea, I worked in an industry, financial services, where you were rewarded really for FaceTime, and I hated that. So you need to be able to just get up and go home. So it really is important for people to take that time and to focus on their kids. And as I mentioned, as one of the mothers said for many of the others, it's great to just get away from your own house, because if you're at home, you're going to be doing that project or organizing that closet or ordering groceries or whatever. So, you know, really get away from your own house. And if you can't afford to pay for something, go visit some relatives. So there are other places that you can be going.
Pamela, when you talk about FaceTime and financial services, FaceTime with bosses, FaceTime with customers?
Customers were great. My customers were always really wonderful. It was the fact that in certain industries, you really needed to be sitting at your desk long hours. So I know that when I was in a managerial position and I had people with young kids, I would go around at 5 o'clock and say, look, get out of here. And they'd say, well, we don't want to leave before you leave. And I'd say, well, at that point, I had teenagers, and they didn't care if I ever came home. So I didn't need to. They stayed up later. Your kids go to bed earlier, so you get out of here. I know you're going to get your work done. So if you're a manager out there, please think about the people who work for you. And don't be sending these emails, you know, in the middle of the night and expect them to respond to them. Let people have their time off.
Well, so let's talk about managing that transition, though. Not that anybody, you know, has to do this because they're managers, but just because they're parents. But reaching the point where you just talked about, where your kids were teenagers and didn't care if you came home or not. What was that like? I mean, I have to believe there was some sort of a gradual dawning of awareness there.
Well, yeah, we raise children to be independent. And, you know, that is wonderful, but it also sometimes it's painful because they have friends, they have lives, they want to go out and do things, and they don't always include you. But that's really what we are raising them to do. So we have to have a life that's separate from our children as well, that we need to provide them that example. So don't try to hold on to your kids when they're ready to go off and do other things. That doesn't benefit them.
Right. So as you point out, be there for your children. Just don't be there all the time.
Exactly.
Well, so back to the subject of vacations, is where to go as important as just to make sure that you're doing something that makes people happy?
It doesn't matter where you go. It really doesn't. But try to, if you can, get away for even a little bit. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to go someplace that you're going to be able to have time to spend with each other.
All right. So you mentioned the concept of spreading out the mentors, because the mother is not the only mentor. This was touched on earlier here. Despite this book's title, I mean, kids do have lots of mentors. How do you encourage kids to reach out to them?
Well, the first mentor, of course, the parents, but the second mentor is the teacher. And so children are going to have a number of teachers. And I was really amazed at the stories years later of these wonderful teachers who had helped the children at difficult transition points. Excuse me. And excuse me, the next were grandparents.
Mm-hmm. All right, so parents first, grandparents, then teachers, or was it grandparents or grandparents, teachers, grandparents?
Teachers first, mm-hmm. Grandparents second, and coaches third. But coaches were lower down the list than I had thought they would be. Coaches were were people who taught them skills. Teachers were people who gave them a new perspective and gave them confidence, and grandparents gave them confidence and gave them love.
All right. So is, did you find among the people you talked to that some of the mothers felt a sense of reluctance in sharing their kids, in essence, with other people who would help raise them?
The working mothers I spoke to didn't. The working mothers, I think, it had experience in the workplace of how important mentors were. So they knew that this was okay to have other people involved in their children's lives.
And I'm trying to get an idea of the split here. You certainly did talk to a lot of working mothers, but was there an equal number of women who did not work outside the home?
I didn't do a personal interviews of women mm-hmm. who did not work outside the home. So that was just really the survey results that gave me the perspective of the grown children. And all of these grown children, whether their parents worked or not, did find that teachers were very helpful.
Okay, you mentioned that coaches weren't as important as you might have thought they'd be, but there is a whole chapter in here on sports, and you do make a pretty good-sized emphasis on getting kids into sports. With what benefits?
Well, one of the benefits, obviously, is that they learn teamwork. And so the thing about sports is that you need a certain number of people to show up to even play the game. And so as one of the parents said, they didn't allow their child to quit once they had started sports during a season. They could change sports after the season. But as one mother said, we told our kids that you needed to finish well. So if you start something, you have to finish it. And that they also felt, excuse me, that they learned how to learn defeat, and that something that you learn very quickly is that you're not going to win every game, and that you learn how to handle defeat.
Okay, I can tell your voice is about to give out on you here with this round of coughing, so I'm going to ask Megan to cue up the Writer's Almanac. We're going to run that again as we head out of the show. So, Pamela Lenihan, I want to thank you for joining us today in the Exchange. Sorry things are going a little askew with your voice there, but thanks for talking to us about My Mother, My Mentor.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, take care.